Gracious Words. Gracious Words is taken from the weekly women's Bible study taught by Cheryl Broderson at Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.
We behold your glory, God, in the face of Christ. It shows us who you are, revealing who you are.
In today's study, we'll continue to see what it means to truly worship Jesus. We are reminded that worship involves surrender and sacrifice. And when we come to Him, we bring not just words, but our whole lives.
We will come before you, Lord, in wonder, wonder. We will fall on our knees and surrender. We surrender to you.
And now here is part two of Cheryl's message titled, Wise Men Worship.
Spurgeon, who was a pastor in the 1800s in England, very prolific writer, and an eloquent, deep minister of the gospel. It was said that he was crossing a busy street in London, and this is when there were carriages with horses. And all of a sudden, in the middle of the street, he just stopped. And later, when he finished crossing the street, somebody said, you know, Pastor Spurgeon, what was that? I saw you just stand in the middle of the street. You almost got hit. He said, I felt a cloud come between the presence of God and myself. And I couldn't continue until that cloud was lifted. That's a pursuit. A pursuit of the presence of God. A constant pursuit. Next is perseverance. It's ongoing. They were not about to stop when the direction became unclear and they couldn't see their way. They were going to continue to pursue. If following the star didn't work, then we will stop and we will ask questions. We will seek direction. But we will not stop following or seeking the presence of the Lord. They were committed and they would not be detoured or derailed. Thirdly, it's the proclamation of purpose. They let everyone know our lives, our journey is because we want to worship the one who is born King of the Jews. A common person, I'm here to worship Jesus. A king, I'm here to worship the King of the Jews. The chief priests, we're here to worship the King of the Jews. They wanted everyone to know the purpose of why they had come, the purpose of their lives, their single focus. My life, my journey, all that I've done is about worshiping the one who is born King of the Jews. They made it known that they were there to find, pay homage, and revere the true king. They were there to worship the one who had been born biologically, intentionally, and divinely, the King of the Jews, the hope of the whole world. They were not intimidated by the disinterest or unrest of those they questioned who were living in Jerusalem. They were not intimidated by the decorum or superior knowledge of the religious leaders. And they were not intimidated by the dangerous, deceptive court of King Herod. They didn't care. They made it known. We're here. Whether you like it or not, whether you agree with us or not, we're here to worship the one who is born King of the Jews. Next, we see receptivity. They received the word of the Lord from priests. They listened to the directions to Bethlehem, and they rejoiced to see the star once more. They went to the very house the star stood over. You see, they were willing to receive whatever directives would lead them to Jesus. Whatever directives would lead them to Jesus, they were all in. You know, I know people that were like, well, I don't really like to hear people preach. You know, I kind of just like to read the Bible for myself. That's not worship. Worship is the whole, the whole. Worship is the willingness to hear it, to talk about it, and to read it for yourself. All of it. All of it. You know, we're such a picky culture, aren't we? Well, I don't really feel it. I don't really like it. My feelings, you know? We give our feelings way too much credibility. Now, I believe in feelings, but they're not to be given so much credibility. You know, feelings. Today, I feel like a boy. No. No. You know, my biology, my DNA, it's telling me something different. My feelings can lie to me. Oh, my goodness, can my feelings lie? My dad's feelings lied to him, let me tell you. Because I love to tell stories about when his feelings lied to him. Because you think he's perfect. Well, I remember this Sunday that my dad practically floated back to the office. I was sitting with my mom and my sister. My dad comes into his office. And he did something that was not like him. He went straight over to my mom and he gave her a great big kiss. And she's like, what's up? What's going on? He said, well, Kay, from the time I was 12 years old till I was 17, there was this one woman, I used to pray that she would be my wife. I had such strong feelings for her, and every camp I went to, I claimed the promise of God that she would be my wife. He who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord, Proverbs 18. And he said, when she married somebody else when I was 18, I was crestfallen. But today she came to the church and greeted me at the back door, and I was, thank God for unanswered prayers. Feelings can lie. Feelings can actually say, this is the Lord. And you're like, you're lying. And you're just a feeling. Nothing more than feelings. That's why we have to test the spirits to see, is this of God or is this just feelings? Is this just because I want it? I broke up with Brian 5 times before I married him. It's because I wanted to make sure it wasn't feeling. He broke up with me once. It was because, and that was just to get even. But I wanted to make sure it wasn't just feelings. He was one of the best-looking young men I had ever seen in my life. He was so godly, so kind. It was his kindness. And one time we were driving, and all of a sudden he pulled over the car because there was a little boy selling flowers, and he bought the flowers and he gave them to me. I was like, no. This has got to be God. It can't just be because you're good-looking and really nice and good looking, and you know, it's got to be God. It's got to be God. I had to have it confirmed to me that it wasn't just my feelings, because I knew that feelings could lie. So there was receptivity. They received the word of the Lord from the priest. Even though the priest didn't believe it, is that incredible? They received it. This is the word of the Lord. This is a prophetic word. We're on our way to Bethlehem. They listened to the directions, even though it came from this ungodly secular king who was an imitation on the throne. And they rejoiced to see the star, and they followed it. They followed it. Then next we see that they plunged in. They were fully immersed. They didn't stand at the door and say, hi, we're wise men. Maybe you could tell. We just like to maybe see, or do you have a baby in the house? Have there been any prophecies about him? Is there anything special about him? No. These wise men were like, I'm coming in. They entered the house. It was the full immersion. They didn't do it half-heartedly. They didn't come all that way to stand at the door or to peek in the window. They entered in. C.S. Lewis, in his allegorical biography called The Pilgrim's Regress, A Pilgrim's Regress, he talks about how when he came to Christ, he knew he had to plunge all the way in, that no half-hearted effort would work, but he had to be fully committed, and he had to believe the whole of the Bible or none of it at all. This is an Oxford professor, and he's looking at Christianity, and he says, I have to believe the whole. I have to believe that Jonah was swallowed by a great fish and then spit out. I have to believe that the whole world was destroyed at one point by a flood, except for a family of six who built a huge barge and saved the animals of the earth through that barge. I have to either believe this, the whole thing, or nothing at all. You have to plunge in. Worship is believing it all. God said it, I believe it. That's worship. Because worship is faith. Faith. It is, I believe in Jesus. I believe his word. I believe his prophecies. I believe his promises. That if he said it, he will do it. That's part of it. They wanted the full experience. Next, we see presentation. That they opened their treasuries to the Lord. What they had saved, stashed, amassed, reserved, hidden from others, protected, procured by sacrifice and hard work. They opened their treasury to Jesus. They trusted Jesus with their greatest treasure. See, part of worship is opening my heart to Jesus and showing him all that's in my heart, my treasury. Your treasury is in your heart. And we don't feel safe with everyone. You know, there's certain things that we think are so precious that people are like, that's it. That's it. I remember knitting these dishcloths for each member, all my nieces. And I overheard one of my nieces saying to the other niece, what is this anyway? And the one niece said, oh, it's something Cheryl made. I remember the pain. Like, that hurts. You know, that was precious to me. To make that, I was praying for you, even while I was knitting each stitch. But to have it, like, profane, you know what I mean? Something that you put your time and you put your heart into. Someone going, really, is this it? I remember Brian and my first Christmas tree, our first Christmas tree. And it was like, seriously, it was a Charlie Brown Christmas tree. But when we got to the lot, it was like so expensive. No wonder my dad preached against him. He was cheap. And we saw a Christmas tree, because I always vowed, all of us kids did, our rebellion is that we all have Christmas trees to this day. And we had one till I was 7 years old, and then we had a 10-foot one because somebody took pity on me and bought it. My dad didn't know what to do with it, so put it downstairs in the house. But we always had a Christmas tree. So anyway, we get one that's probably about 3 feet high, and we decide to make our own decorations, bread dough decorations, painted them. Then I found this blue velvet ribbon among some items that had been given to me by an aunt who had died. And so then I tied kisses around it. So our tree was filled with these little kisses and these bread dough ornaments that we made ourselves. We were really proud of that tree. And I remember a friend walked in and she's like, what is that supposed to be? Just like that. And I said, it's our Christmas tree. Well, what are those. Those are the ornaments we made. See, that's Mary. I know she's a little plump, but that happened when I was baking her. And there's Joseph, and there's the wise men, and it tells the story of Christmas and these kisses. And because we love Jesus, we love him, and what better way to honor them than by chocolate? And she's like, oh, it's so ugly. It's so little. It's like, well, it's what we could afford. And she's like, oh, I got one of those huge flock trees, and ours is so beautiful. And I was like, you know what? Maybe it's time for you to go home and look at that beautiful tree. You know, our treasures aren't safe with everybody, are they? You can't open your heart to everybody. There are scammers and people that want to take advantage of you. Your heart's not safe with anyone but Jesus. Your heart is safe in the presence of Jesus. Your hurts, your priorities, your treasures matter to Jesus, and they are safe. They are safe. That's worship. I trust you with my treasures. I trust you to esteem and understand why this is precious to me. You know why this matters. When it doesn't matter to anybody else, Jesus, you know why it matters to me. Next, gifts. They gave to Jesus their best. They gave gold and frankincense and myrrh. Part of worship is giving. We used to have on the back of our bulletin, we worship in giving. Because when we give, we are showing our investment in Jesus. I believe in you. I invest. It's a physical way to show that we love and we trust Jesus. You know, it's interesting because nothing bothers people more than this word, offering, tithe. That bothers people. Why should I give to an institution? You're not. You're not giving to an institution. You're giving to Jesus. It's an investment. It's a way, because you know what? Our money is something we really protect, isn't it? I love my money. I don't love money. That's the root of all evil. But I sure like my bank account. I love saving money. I used to always want to be the banker in Monopoly. I don't like credit cards. I like the green stuff. I like the coins. I really do. In fact, I was saying to a girl, like, I hope we never go to credit cards because I really love money. She goes, you shouldn't. I was like, dang, she's probably a Christian. You know, not like dang, she's a Christian, but dang, I just exposed my evil heart to a Christian. And I'm like, no, I don't mean like I love money. I like money. Like the feel. I like it in my wallet. I like my purse to feel heavy, you know, which it rarely does. But I like it. You know, I love England because they have these things called pounds. They're like gold. They're gold colored. They have no gold in them at all, but they're like gold doubloons. And when you have them, your purse is so heavy. Like, you know, I have money right now because I probably have 10 pounds in my purse. Because you can feel it. You're like, you know? In fact, I think you could get mugged easier because people know you got money with you, you know? But they gave their gifts to Jesus. Their best, gold, frankincense, myrrh. These were treasures of the East. These were items that people could save. Myrrh, frankincense, they lasted. They lasted, as did gold. These were things that lasted. They could have kept them as a security for themselves. But they gave it to a young child who was with his mother. They gave it. How irresponsible does it seem to give a young child money? I remember my grandson. We gave him 10 $1 bills. He was 4, and we gave his brother $20. And he just thought he was so much richer than his brother. A child doesn't understand the value of money. But that didn't matter. They gave it. They left it there. And then finally, their posture. We're told that they fell down. Now, in the East, falling down, bowing down, was a way of saying to the person you are bowing to, you are greater than I am. Do you notice they didn't bow in Herod's court? Is there anything about them bowing to Herod?
No.
No. But to this child in this ordinary house with his mother, they bowed down. Now, bowing down was also this. When a king was surrendering to another king, he would bow before that king, and that king would place his foot on the neck of that king. And the one bowing down was saying, my life is yours. It's in your hands. You can do whatever you want to me. So bowing in the East was saying, you're greater, and you can do whatever you want to me. Bowing was making yourself lower, lower, lower than the person in whose presence you are with. Lower. See, part of worship is making ourselves lower, 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 that Jesus might be greater, greater, greater. As John the Baptist said, I must decrease and he must increase. Today, as I mentioned before, we've trivialized worship in our culture. We make it about how music or a band or a set of songs moves us. We have reduced worship to singing. We have made worship something we do at church. But worship is greater, more demanding, and more rewarding than simply singing. Much more. In Romans 12:1, and I'm going to quote from the NLT, and so, dear brothers and sisters, I plead with you to give your bodies to God because of all he has done for you. Let them be a living and holy sacrifice, the kind he will find acceptable. This is truly the way to worship him. Worship is not a one-off. I did that yesterday. I went to worship service on Monday. Worship is a life pursuit. Learn from these wise men. Obviously, there is a reason they are called wise men in the Bible, or that it was even translated as wise men. And I think it has to do with the fact that they worshiped. In Proverbs 9:10, it says, the fear of the Lord, or reverence, worship, is the beginning of wisdom. When you worship, and when you think of worship, don't take your cues from the current culture. Return to this account of these wise men and seek to pursue the presence of Jesus. Don't be satisfied with anything less than the presence of Jesus. Persevere, even when the way is not clear. Proclaim your purpose of life, that it is to worship and be in the presence of Jesus. Be receptive to his word and his guidance in whatever form the Lord brings it to you. Plunge in, not with a half-hearted effort. Give him all. Open your treasury continually to him. As it says in Psalm 62:8, pour out your heart before him. God is a refuge for us. Give Jesus your best, your absolute best, and continually make Jesus greater than yourself. This is the way to worship.
Worship is more than a song. It's the offering of our entire lives to God. We are reminded that Jesus is worthy of our time, our devotion, and our obedience. May we continue to seek Him with wholehearted faith and joy. We hope you have been blessed by today's Bible study. For more information about the Gracious Words radio program and the teaching ministry of Cheryl Broderson, please visit our website at graciouswords.com. Coming up next time on the Gracious Words program, Cheryl begins a new message titled, The Look of Faith. We do hope you'll make plans to join us. Again, for more information, please visit our website at graciouswords.com.
We will come before you, Lord, in wonder, wonder. We will fall on our knees and surrender, we surrender.
This program is sponsored by Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.